This is Lancer Radio, Pasadena City College, and this is Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Welcome. Well, it's October, and you know what that means. Halloween and scary stuff. And we have an author in studio today who's going to scare you, even if she's making you laugh, and she is so talented, it is a little bit scary. So we'll get to her in just a moment. But first of all, good morning. This is Dot Cannon with Lancer Radio News. In national news, a hurricane watch is in effect for parts of Louisiana and Florida. And welcome back to Over Coffee. Author F.J.R. Titchener both tells great stories and is living one. F.J.R. combines horror and humor in her young adult fiction, and she's going to show you how she does that really soon as she joins me here on the show, because her debut young adult novel, called Confessions of the Very First Zombie Slayer That I Know Of, is scheduled for publication next May. By the way, she's also collaborating on a trilogy called The Prospero Chronicles with fellow author Matt Carter, who just happens to be her husband. FJR attended classes here at PCC, graduated with a BA in English from Cal State University at the age of 19, just began querying agents for her novel in July of 2012, and won 3 book deal later. We are going to be talking about that journey. FJR, welcome.
Hi, it's great to be here.
It is great to have you. First of all, on your webpage, you say that this life chose you. You didn't choose it. How did storytelling choose you?
Well, it's the first thing I remember. I remember stories before anything else. I remember them being the center of my life since I was able to pick up a book, since my parents started reading to me. They took me to this co-op sort of thing in a bookstore that's now long gone, of course. Parents reading to the kids reading to the younger kids, and it was the most natural extension in the world to me to start making up stories to tell instead of reading them.
That sounds like an amazing experience, too. When did you first start to write down these stories you made up?
Soon as I could type. I think I was maybe 7 the first time I typed up a terrible, terrible story that my dad printed up and bound for me. He probably still has it somewhere.
From a 7-year-old typing up that story, how did you progress to somebody who's a professional writer? How did your parents nurture your talent?
Let's see. Well, my dad knew I was a writer before I did. He was always encouraging me to spend as much time as I could possibly need working on it. He was an English teacher, is an English teacher, and taught me all of the nuts and bolts of writing, always correcting my grammar, which stuck. So that became natural as well. And I went to college early. Started out thinking I was going to be an actress, actually, but realized that English classes were where I was comfortable, where I belonged, and writing, which has been a compulsion for as long as I can remember, became my active passion and pursuit when I was maybe 17 or 18.
While you were here at PCC, what classes did you take in the writing area that were most helpful to you in honing your craft?
Oh, I wish I could remember the names of them. I know I had actually a script writing class here. I wish I could remember the professor's name. I don't. But it was one of the only creative writing classes I actually got to take within the English major structure. And that was when we got to start swapping things in class and critiquing. And that was some of the most fun that I had here outside of the theater class where I met Matt, obviously.
Tell me about meeting him very briefly, your fellow collaborator.
It was in a music theater class. He was taking it for the first time. I have thanked our friend Lisa many times for talking him into taking it that time. And we were doing a warm-up exercise, and the teacher says, I'm sure Matt will find some way to make a spectacle of himself. And instantly I thought, ooh, which one is Matt?
Well, did he find a way to make a spectacle of himself?
He did indeed, with noises that I can't replicate here. We were doing one of those rhythm games where everybody makes noises.
Did you know at that point that
I knew who he was and that we were going to be close?
You probably never foresaw, though, that you'd be writing something with him in the future.
No, not at first, since obviously meeting in a music theater class, but we bonded over writing really quickly afterwards. I was already writing, still thinking I was going to be an actor, but as I've said, writing's always been a compulsion. I never stopped doing it no matter what I thought I was going to do. And he was writing already, and we started swapping things pretty much right away.
What'd you write together?
Oh, we wrote some short stories together. First, we wrote one called What Arbor Day Means to Me, which was about a group of kids trying to plant a tree, not realizing the zombie apocalypse is happening around them.
Oh, that must have been fun.
It was. It did not get into the anthology we were writing it for. It was zombie stories for every day of the year, but it was just such an experience writing it with him.
How did you come to love Halloween, horror, and zombie stuff?
I've loved Halloween for as long as I can remember, which is odd because I was terrified of horror movies and all sorts of related things when I was little. But I loved playing dress up. I loved the costumes. I loved fall in general. Matt is the one who introduced me to horror, and I did not think it was going to take, but he was very good at a beginner course of horror movies, and very, very quickly I was hooked.
Give me a beginner first lesson in horror movies. If somebody says, no, I'm terrified of horror movies, what do you tell them to watch?
Let's see. I think we started with Shaun of the Dead, which, again, begins my zombie horror comedy love, which you can see in the book we're going to talk about. And then there was a lot of the old school Universal monster movies because they're more restrained but are an introduction for a person as they were for the world into horror as it is now.
From loving horror and compulsive writing, how did you first get the idea for Confessions of the Very First Zombie Slayer that I know of?
I wish I could say where it came from exactly. I was driving to work one morning, and Cassie just spoke up in my head clear as day, and most of the first chapter had written itself in my head before I got to work, before I even knew her name. And I can see little bits of all of the influences I've mentioned in it, but it just came out of nowhere fully formed as it was.
Cassie, of course, is your protagonist, Cassie
Yes.
Fremont. Let's do with her, before you read in the next segment, what you do on your blog. Who or what is she going up against in terms of a protagonist versus a villain?
Well, there are the zombies, obviously. There's the fact that the world is falling apart, and it's very easy to fall apart with it. Her main antagonist is that danger of falling apart and giving up, and her main strength is her ability to keep her sense of humor and sense of fun and adventure with the help of her best friend Norman and her other friends in order to keep their sanity as they survive.
And incidentally, Cassie is a teenager.
She is. She's 15 years old, and she's a geek. That's why she survives, why she becomes the first zombie slayer that she knows of, because when she sees a zombie sit up, she knows what to do about it.
And we're going to find out more about that firsthand in just a moment. You and I are listening to author F.J.R. Titchener. Confessions of the Very First Zombie Slayer That I Know Of is her upcoming book to be published in May of 2014. When we come back, I'm going to get her to read from that here on Over Coffee. This is Dot Cannon on LancerRadio.org. We're Lancer Radio, streaming live at LancerRadio.org. This is Dot Cannon with Over Coffee. Author F.J.R. Titchener loves Halloween, horror literature, and humor, and she combines horror and humor in her brand new forthcoming young adult book, Confessions of the Very First Zombie Slayer That I Know Of. F.J.R. is in studio now. We've been talking about her book, but you know what? That's not going to be enough, F.J.R. Could you read from it, please?
Certainly. This is after Cassie has accidentally become the very first zombie slayer because she's her friend has just been accidentally killed in a paintball game on a camping trip and became the first zombie, and she had to kill him again. And this is what happens afterwards. I'd like it to be known how deeply, sorely tempted I am to take advantage of the leisure and hindsight available to me to come up with a witty one-liner, something like, and stay dead, only much cooler, and pretend it's what I said next. It's not like there are a lot of people who know the same things I know about what happened. 100 years from now, who's to say it didn't go down exactly however I decide to say it did? But I'm not going to do that. Let's get this straight right now. I, Cassandra Emily Fremont, the very first zombie slayer that I know of, do solemnly swear that this memoir, written for the benefit of any generations of human beings that may someday, possibly, hopefully follow mine, and in stark contrast to all pre-apocalyptic history books I'm familiar with, will contain nothing but the pure and whole truth of the events it details to the best of my knowledge, no matter how painful, private, embarrassing, or inescapably lame. Sound fair? Good. Unfortunately, with Mark down for the count, again, it means that instead of dry action hero humor, you're going to be treated to this loving description of me majorly losing my mind. I mean, beyond the skull-crushing, brain-mashing kind of mind loss I'd already committed. Enjoy! Cassie? Norman's voice was fragile and lost and only reached the thinnest outer surface of my awareness. I don't think there were any actual words in my first response. It was this garbled screech constricted by the urge to vomit. I scraped the tissue that had once controlled Mark's most basic vital impulses off my fingers, smearing lumpy streaks of blood down my jeans, which didn't make the whole not vomiting thing any easier. Oh dear God. That was all that slipped out of Hector when he found us, but it was more than I had ever heard him say involuntarily. It took him more than twice as many breaths as usual to summon the calm, reasonable tone he always had whenever there was no possible excuse for anyone to be calm or reasonable. What happened, Cass? I knew it was vitally important for this question to be answered accurately and efficiently, so I really tried to process and order my thoughts thoroughly enough to communicate them that time. I didn't quite succeed. My next set of jumbled syllables fit together something like this. Mark, dead, then not, but still was dead again, had to. Okay. Hector tried to calm me, retrieving the remnants of the paintball gun in exactly the same hovering way you reassure a cornered animal before throwing a canvas bag over its head. Okay, you had to. I had to, I repeated, trying to bury my face in my hands before I remembered the blood on them. With me unarmed, Norman worked up the nerve to drop his own gun and put an arm around me instead, which seemed to make Hector decide it was safe to retreat toward camp. I formed one more word while he could still hear me, the essential word of both defense and warning. Zombie, I said. Neither of my friends answered me, but I could tell by the moment of complete stillness that they had both heard. I don't blame Hector for reporting me to Kim or Kim for calling the cops. What else were they supposed to do? I don't blame Rory for screaming awful things and chucking briquettes at Norman and me until she had to be restrained. She couldn't hit the broadside of a sandcrawler anyway. I've seen corpses walk, skyscrapers crumble in disrepair, and the busiest freeways lie vacant at 8:30 on a Monday morning, but those 45 minutes it took to get a full emergency response to our nice, secluded campground were the most surreal of my life. Mark was dead. I had killed him. Without the zombie factor, it was the kind of big deal that adults always handled quickly behind drawn curtains, leaving us to squabble over carefully portioned scraps of information. With so many of them and so few of them and so many of us, with so much evidence for so long, it couldn't work that way this time. Kim tried at first to stop people from seeing the body, but by then everyone had gathered too close, ready to snap up the precious details while they could. Once they had seen it, they had all the knowledge anyone had on the matter, and then no one seemed to know what to do. Some stayed, not too close, watching. Others spread as far away from the mess as they could, busying themselves with whatever could be packed up. No one would be staying in the tent or making brownies in the fire pit that night. Liz went off somewhere out of sight to throw up. She wasn't the only one. Norman didn't speak, just kept me wrapped tightly in all there was of his slight frame, simultaneously cradling me and pinning my arms to my sides, ignoring the film of paint, blood, and gray matter covering us both. Hector and Rory settled on either side of us, sentinels, whether for our protection or everyone else's, I couldn't tell. By the time we heard the sirens on the access road, I'd been able to settle on one simple fact. Here's where it starts getting kind of cool again. I'm okay, guys. This was the first thing I had said after the Z-word, just as the two dark blue uniforms came into view, when Norman's grip on me tightened in anticipation of being severed. I could hear the leftover constriction in my voice, but it was so steady that Norman actually looked at me like he knew me for the first time since the paintball game. Would it be hopeless optimism, he asked, if I said we'd be laughing about this someday? Probably. The smile felt strange on my face, but it convinced him enough of my lucidity that, after an extra hug of a squeeze, he let me walk unaided into the authorities' waiting arms. "My name is Cassie Fremont," I said, loudly enough for all the witnesses to hear, even though at least 90% of them knew that much already. "And I'm very, very sorry, but I killed Marcus Cates. Twice." Then I turned around and held my hands out behind me.
You've just heard, and you and I have just heard, actually, author F.J.R. Titchener reading from Confessions of the Very First Zombie Slayer that I know of. And I had to turn the mic off because I thought I was going to laugh out loud. That is great.
Thank you.
If we're not going to be a spoiler, give me, would you, FDR, just a little preview of what's going to happen next for Cassie?
Well, she does go to the police station and hears the world fall apart from a secure drunk tank, which is part of why she's one of the last people standing. She breaks out and goes to see what's left and finds her friends holed up in the hotel where most of their parents were, and discovers that one of them is missing. Liz has gone home to New York because she was so distraught, and is now stranded there, of course, because none of the transportation is working. So they come up with an epic road trip across zombie-infested America to go rescue her.
And this is going to be a great book when it comes out.
Thank you.
What was this like? You said you got the first chapter in your mind. We may have to continue when we get back. Mm-hmm. But from getting that first chapter in your mind and hearing Cassie's voice on your way to work, what was the creative process like coming up with the entire book?
This was a very quick one. It took me about 7 months to get from idea to sending it out on submission. I just went straight from beginning to end, pretty much. I spent a lot of time on Google Maps, searching their routes, looking at the scenery that they'd be going through. Most of it was just listening again to her. I'm someone who works with outlines. I can't go without knowing where I'm going. So I knew the vague idea of where it was ending, where the next chapter was going to be. But she has a voice that leads you.
She kind of took you where the story was going to go.
Yeah.
You and I are listening today to F.J.R. Titchener, author of Confessions of the Very First Zombie Slayer That I Know Of. And we're going to be back in just a moment and continue with her story of getting that book shopped around and how it was published. This is Over Coffee, Dot Cannon with you on Lancer Radio at LancerRadio.org. We're Lancer Radio at LancerRadio.org, coming to you live from the beautiful Pasadena City College campus. You're with Over Coffee this morning, Dot Cannon with you, talking with F.J.R. Titchener. I keep trying not to call you Fiona, because Fiona was your name before the Ogre Princess came, as you say on your website.
That is how the poem goes.
But when you look for her brand new book that's coming out in May, Confessions of the Very First Zombie Slayer That I Know Of, F.J.R. Titchener is the name that you're going to want to be looking for.
Right.
We were just talking about the creative process. You said it took 7 months from idea to that's it, I'm sending it out.
Mm-hmm, that's the quickest I've ever done one on my own.
That's incredible. You say on your website you absolutely hate writing query letters, but you obviously were very good at it because you've now got a 3-book deal. What's your advice to authors that are going to do something like that, a query letter?
Do your homework, of course. Make sure the book is as strong as it can be, which means reading a lot. Read things in your genre, things out of your genre, and read things on publishing, on writing, on marketing, and wherever you're querying, make sure you read everything you can on what they like and follow the rules, because that will impress them as much as anything else.
What were you reading in your genre as Cassie came into being?
Ooh, let's see. I believe I was reading Uglies by Scott Westerfeld at the time.
Which, by the way, I got absolutely hooked looking at on your website. That's something. Tell me the story of getting that query letter out there. And you'd read and you'd researched. Out it went. Then what happened for you?
Oh, well, it's terrifying, of course. And you send them out in these little batches over the course of months. And, oh my God, an agent, Jennifer Mishler, the awesome Jennifer Mishler of Literary Council, wrote back saying, I'm loving your book, just wanted to check if it's still available. She was in the process of writing it, and I just about fainted. She was in the process of reading it, and I just about fainted. And told her, yes, everything is still available, because, of course, I had a healthy heap of rejection letters by then, but it only takes the one yes.
It certainly does. How many did J.K. Rowling ever get? I want to say 26 on Harry Potter.
I don't know the figure off the top of my head. I know it was a lot.
So you went in to see her, and what happened?
Well, I didn't actually get to see her. She lives in New York. We deal with everything online and over the phone. We wrote back and forth a couple of times before there was finally the I'd like to offer to represent you letter. Then there was much celebration in the Carter household, and we talked about it. She said she loved it, suggested sending it to Jollyfish Press, which is where she did and where it was accepted, and where My other upcoming work, The Prospero Chronicles, which is, by the way, going to be 5 books, but 3 are under contract so far with Jellyfish Press. That's where that's all going to happen, too, and it's a very exciting place.
Let's look at that briefly before we run out of time about The Prospero Chronicles. What's happening? This is the one you're doing with Matt?
Yes, this is the one we're writing together, and I'm sure he'll be able to tell you lots about it next week. It is about a shape-shifting alien invasion in a small town in Northern California and about the teenagers who band together to stop it. It's about Mina Todd, who has been fighting the aliens all her life, and about Ben Pastor, the boy she brings in from the outside when he's visiting town, and about them trying to build a friendship and working relationship in a world full of aliens who can look like people.
Wow. So they have the normal teenage challenges and then another challenge right in front of them.
Oh, yes.
And how are things going to grow and develop in Prospero Chronicles as this happens with all the aliens?
Oh, it gets more complicated. We find out that the aliens aren't all on the same side and that sometimes you have to cooperate with enemies to take down worse enemies. That's going to come up. And Ben and Mina will have a very tumultuous friendship and possibly more developing and gather other fascinating people around them their efforts.
You mentioned to me off mic that you're on your 3rd book right now, just about finishing the 3rd of 5.
Correct. Wow. Things are getting very intense. This is very much a turning point where things get serious. We have some important people being taken by the aliens who are known as Splinters, which is what the first book is called. It'll be out in about a year. Exact release date to come.
I'm going to guess maybe Halloween of next year, but
here's hoping.
Look for Splinters by F.J.R. Titchener and Matt Carter is what we'll tell people.
Exactly.
In our closing minutes here, who do you consider has been your best influence in terms of teaching you about your craft? What other writers do you look up to, and who's most molded what you do?
Well, there's my dad, of course, who is my first and best English teacher. He's still teaching English and has a book out, by the way, on SAT prep. I believe it's published under K. Titchener. Then there's, within my genre, I love Lauren Oliver, Scott Westerfeld, Suzanne Collins, of course, but in terms of inspiration, it's got to be J.K. Rowling. Even though she's fantasy and I'm sci-fi horror, the passion of the connection I felt to her characters and her world as a kid is what I will spend my life trying to recreate for my own readers.
I love her world, right down to where she makes the different coins and tells you the newts and the galleons and everything like that.
It's so vivid and alive and complete.
And I'm looking forward to seeing what Confessions of the Very First Zombie Slayer is like. Did you have any challenges at all in creating the world of Cassie, or was it pretty smooth sailing?
Well, it's pretty much our world with zombies suddenly coming into being. The dead suddenly stop staying dead. Of course, there were parts with them going places I haven't been. A lot of the places they go, I have been. It was very much based on a road trip that Matt and I took in college that covered very similar ground. Then there was the people that they meet on the road. There aren't many of those, but how they're handling the zombie situation and them talking to adults who are trying to guess at why this is happening. I had to come up with some reasonable solutions that a zoologist would think of when finding herself in the zombie apocalypse, because they do end up finding one.
What are some of the reasonable solutions behind a zombie apocalypse?
She more or less concludes that there's not enough information.
Which, when you come right down to it, that's usually the root of every problem, lack of communication.
She proposes Komodo dragon theory is why the zombies' bites are lethal, because there's something growing in them that can't be fought. But as to why people are getting up, she thinks that science will have to get back on its feet to where it was before the apocalypse and then about 20 years further in that particular direction before they'll have any ideas. That's what she tells the kids.
And once again, a great book that we're going to be looking forward to reading about in May 6th of 2014.
Yes,
is your release
mark
date.
Mark your calendars.
What would you consider FJR, very briefly, if you had to say in one sentence advice to writers that want to do what you're doing, what would you say to them?
One word?
One sentence.
Read, write, repeat.
I love that. FJR, thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much.
You and I have been listening to FJR Titchener, who is not only the author of Confessions of the Very First Zombie Slayer That I Know Of, young adult horror humor fiction coming out May 6th of 2014, but also co-author of The Prospero Chronicles, a five-book series with her co-author and husband, Matt Carter. Look for that Halloween, thereabouts, next year. This is Over Coffee. Dot Cannon with you back in just a moment on LancerRadio.org.